Yeah. Let's go.
We just gotta go hard.
I go the hardest. I bring the pain. Not what you used to.
Adam Love here from All Star. Welcome, Adam, to the show, man, and welcome to the world of roofing.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate it.
So for those of you guys that don't know who Adam Love is, Adam is now the new CEO of All Star Construction here in Minneapolis. But you guys have grown now to how many brands? You guys have quite a few.
11 acquired in the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Had a partner with All Star and their other two brands that they acquired prior to that.
Who's partnered with Morgan Stanley, which if you do anything in the world of anything, you probably know who Morgan Stanley is. They're one of the largest investment bankers in the world. And you guys are now in the roofing space looking to acquire more companies, but you know, growing tremendously over the last year. And it's been fun to watch this happen. And just as the industry expands, this is the sign of the future. And so welcome, Adam, and I'd love to share your story and understand where you come from and kind of give our listeners and viewers an inside peek into what's going on and what the future really does look like for our space. And so thank you for letting us sit down and hang out today.
Absolutely.
So you'll be at IRE with us too. And I think, right? Yeah, you're coming to IRE.
I think so.
Yeah, you have to come to IRE. I mean, that's like the baptism by fire there. Go to IRE, learn about the industry, hang out with cool people. But this is pretty much your not your first rodeo when it comes to roofing, but definitely you're coming into the space from a really fresh perspective. And I love that. So what's your background look like? Where are you from? What are you doing? Like, how do we get here?
Absolutely. So originally from New York, grew up working construction, you know, started off sweeping job sites, carrying lumber, eventually framing, finished carpentry, doors, windows, cabinetry, trim, et cetera. And I really enjoyed, I think what got me into it, I initially enjoyed being outside in the summers, framing, just being out in the weather, learning new skills. I enjoyed the variety of the work. And then over time, really realized that I, you know, there was a lot of opportunity there for me personally. I went to school for architecture. What I learned there was I love the subject. I don't love the kind of the industry itself. So after college, I got into construction full time, had my own business, built my own business for about 10 years up until the crash and through the crash. And that's when I went back to school. I thought I was going to get out of construction, get out of the trades, get out of maintenance, et cetera. And then somehow I found myself back into it on the institutional side of single family real estate, but from a very different perspective. And I've spent most of my professional career building out national platforms, utilizing large, diverse third-party vendor bases, coming up with frameworks, policies, processes, procedures, technology, to really get them all to act as one and optimize for the customer experience, optimize for the cost structure of the business. And I've done kind of similar versions of that along the way at a number of different stops.
Yeah, and that's pretty awesome watching how, because that whole single family owned by conglomerates, that whole world really exploded in the last, 10 years? And it's become a national player with multi-billions of dollars behind it and lots of large portfolios that are managing properties across the United States. That's an undertaking unlike anything else really in the world. And so it's probably brought a lot of, you had to incorporate a lot of structure into that.
Yeah, it's a really good proxy, actually, for a lot of what we're facing and doing here. I think, you know, back at the time, 2010, 2011, 2012, the largest single-family rental homeowner in the country had 1,000 homes.
Right.
Now there are multiple with more than 80,000 homes under management. On the institutional side, there's probably upwards of 500,000 units now. In order to operate that at that scale, you need structure. You need standardized processes, the way that teams operate. You need purpose-built systems, and you need vendors and good partnerships. So a lot of what I learned there and along the way at other stops, I think lends itself really, really well to just the scale and the explosion of investment that we're seeing on the roofing side as well.
What you just said is interesting. So when you got in or when this you know, before the crash, before all this stuff was out there. He said the largest single family home owner in the country that had the most amount of units was 1,000 units.
Single family rentals, 1,000 units.
Right, 1,000 units. And then right now you're talking upwards of 500,000?
Yeah, the largest today, somewhere between 80,000 and 100,000
so
units nationally, single family homes.
100, that's 100x growth in 10 years. Yeah. Are you saying that roofing is about to go through the same thing?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing it, and really much of that growth happened in the first 5 years, right? I think that's where the opportunity lies, and I think that's what we're facing right now as we're looking for the best partners across the country to come join our platform and what we're trying to do.
I always like looking at parallels within industries because I think it's indicative of the future and what we can see that could happen in potentially other industries. Just out of curiosity, do you know how many single-family operators existed before this all happened? Probably thousands, right? Tens of thousands.
Highly, highly fragmented.
Yeah, absolutely. Highly fragmented.
Tens of thousands that had 5 units, 25 units, 100 units. Mm-hmm. Very, very, not even regionally based, but very local.
Right.
Locally based, for sure.
And then they all, pretty much started to consolidate and become, these part of these larger organizations. And now there's probably only a handful, but they operate probably most of, it's probably the same thing as the 80-20 rule. 80% of the homes are owned by 20% of the people. So it's a very interesting consolidation that exists in that industry, and obviously probably what drew you into roofing, because it's the same parallel.
Absolutely. And a big part of that opportunity, too, if you look back, was on the customer service side.
Yeah.
People were not necessarily satisfied with the product they were receiving. And I think that's a big focus of ours here is how can we continue to optimize that and borrow best practice? Because ultimately, that's what people care about.
Yeah. And I'm watching that. This is still such a early stage to our industry as far as the opportunity goes and as far as the consolidation goes. What do you see as some of the challenges that you're facing or that you've encountered? Because you've only been with All-Star since October, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So pretty new. And I always like to, especially when new people come into the space, I love to get their perspective as early as possible because it's enlightening to us. Because once someone comes in, they've been in for a couple of years, they kind of become acclimated and we all become friends and everyone's cool. But the very beginning, there's this window where we can kind of get the real deal. Like, what do you see in our industry? Like, how do you view us? What do you think that, we could do better? What do you think we do well? What's your overall take?
Yeah, I think so. I've spent much of my first couple of months traveling and on the road and meeting our partners, their teams, understanding the intricacies of the business, how each team operates, the differences in how they operate. And I think what was enlightening for me is, sure, they all do things differently. And there are a number, one thing I learned is there are a number of ways to be successful operating and managing a roofing company. But I think the one thing that was a constant is they each had very, very unique cultures that led to their success. That's such a huge part of this. So I think as we look ahead, one of the major challenges and opportunities for us is how can we build our own successful culture across the platform, leveraging all those differences while maintaining what has led to each of them and making each of them successful in their own right. I think that's going to be a big, a big, huge opportunity here for us. But that's a big part of it. These are really well-run companies with great leaders in place, but they do things differently. But I think, again, there's the cultural side, uniting these brands culturally, and then there's the operational side. And I think as you look across all of our partnership brands, they all do different things really, really well. They're all interested and passionate about different areas of the business. And then there are other areas where they don't care as much. They don't focus as much. Maybe that's not what they're drawn to. And I think, one of our main competitive advantages is going to be creating, and what we're doing now is creating the environment to leverage all of those strengths and passions. We have all the skills. We have all the talent. We have the right partners, the right energy. We've got everything we need. Now it's about creating the atmosphere and the environment to leverage all of that, minimize the weaknesses that we're finding along the way, but learn from each other. And we've already begun doing that a lot and leveraging our partners and their strengths and then building programming, national programming around those strengths.
So when you guys do your acquisitions, is that one of the KPIs that you're looking at is like, what are the true strengths and weaknesses of that organization and how can it help the organization as a whole?
I that's definitely part of it. I think there are naturally, you know, other characteristics and certain profiles that we're looking for, but that leader is just as important as all of that, right? We're looking for folks that want to continue to be a part of this, that they're interested in being a key partner moving forward, that have strong teams, but absolutely, right? We want to bring in folks that that can balance out other weaknesses that we find across our partnerships, for sure.
What are some of the key weaknesses that you're seeing in the industry as a whole that we're probably most vulnerable, you know, as companies?
Yeah, I think a big one is just transparency into the impact of marketing and marketing spend and marketing strategy and what works, what doesn't work. I think there's an apprehension there about spending money because it's very, very opaque. So I think there's a lot that we can do to standardize that and add some sophistication and just transparency, visibility into the impact of that. I think that's a big one. And then I think, you know, I think also just in terms of training and sales training and production training, leveraging systems, there are a lot of different teams that utilize the same systems, but they use them very, very differently from one another, right? They're not using them optimally. They might be using 40% of the functionality of the same system that someone else is using 70% of the functionality. So I think there's a real opportunity to fully leverage systems and just build out. I think, you know, we have certain partners that have really, really strong training systems and training programs. How can we leverage that across all of our other brands? We don't need to reinvent the wheel every time. And I think a big part of my job is not to come in and do that. It's to come in and understand who has figured out different pieces of this, take the different pieces of the puzzle, put them together, and really drive that value creation across the entire platform.
No, and I love that. And that's, you know, it's cool to see all these minds coming together with one intentional focus. And then watching it all just kind of, that, I think that's when you can start to experience growth. And that's probably what you guys experienced, you know, 10 years ago when things were coming together in the single family home world, where, you know, you guys probably were able to grow so quickly because of the amount of information you guys were able to share and working off of each other's strengths and weaknesses. But what, when you were doing it back then, or when this was all happening in that world, because entrepreneurs are, we're a different breed. I mean, we are very, we're a little high strung sometimes and we like things a certain way, and it's a different world because we are our own bosses. But how difficult was it to bring them together and to get them all on the same page working towards the same goal?
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think there is a learning curve there. I think, you know, maybe just to go back and some other similarities, and I'll definitely circle back to your question directly, but I think, you know, back then on the SFR side, there were no purpose-built systems. Nobody had done it at that scale before, as I mentioned, 1,000 homes versus 80,000 or 50,000 in 5 years that we acquired. There were no org structures that were purpose-built for that, to do that. There weren't vendor bases, there weren't leaders, work structures, policies, processes, procedures, systems, nothing was in place. We had no reporting. It all had to be built from scratch. So it was the perfect environment to attract entrepreneurs, because that's what they enjoy. Large, big, hairy challenges, doing things that people have never done before. So I think from the attraction side, it was pretty easy. Now, once you've attracted those entrepreneurs, finding ways to have everyone operate within the same system and begin to standardize different approaches. I think a big part of that evolution is to try a lot of different things, right? And to make sure that there is the freedom to test different things out, test things regionally, nationally, different areas of the country, to make sure that we're measuring results and coming up with the best way. And I think as long as you do that, I think it's, you know, it becomes much easier to get folks to move in the same direction, to begin to implement standardization, best practices, because you've taken the time to truly learn what is a best practice and what does work. You're not coming in with those preconceptions because they really don't exist. I think a lot of that can be leveraged and really applied to what we're facing today if done the right way. So for me, this should be, you know, the ultimate magnet for an entrepreneur. Who wouldn't want to be a part of that, right?
A lot of people struggle with it, though. You know, we've encountered this as we've gone to some events together. We've hung out with some contractors. I've talked to contractors, and you know, and we have very candid conversations. And some of these guys that are doing 10, 15, 30, 40 million dollars a year, they tend to feel as though there's more to lose than there is to gain in these opportunities. Almost as if it's going to put them at some sort of disadvantage or put their team at a disadvantage. When I think I agree with you guys, and studying the opportunity itself, it seems like it's a no-brainer. But yet, a lot of the pushback that I'm hearing is more along the lines of it's almost like they don't want to let go of what they've built and the pride behind it. And it's a great thing to have. You should be proud of what you've built. But also, I don't think a lot of people understand the risk that they're putting themselves into by potentially not looking at these opportunities the way that they should. And I like to study what has happened in the past, obviously, to understand the future. And I keep going back to the past. But I'm curious, like, how many single family home owners back in the day? Because I know people that own 1,000 houses and that own, you know, 600-700 homes. That's a lot of work. If they still choose to be in business today, how different does their company look like today than it did 10 years ago? I mean, back 10 years ago, you're the big guy in the block. Now you're the little fish competing against the really, really big fish. How does that change the entire dynamic of the industry?
Yeah, I think naturally with investment, investment breeds talent and sophistication. So I think as we continue to see the investment ramp up in the roofing space, it's going to attract a lot of talent, a lot of really sharp people. And with that, are going to come a lot of changes. And I think, you know, for folks that are not a part of that, it's going to become harder and harder to compete. Because again, our greatest advantage, and I say this, I'm a broken record, but our greatest advantage are the partners that we already have in place and their skill sets, and being able to leverage and partner with them and have them partner with each other. And we have numerous examples of this already, where they've been able to work together directly, cross states, cross regions, to help each other with certain areas. That network and that network effect is going to be really hard for someone to compete with. And then because we've built out the framework and in kind of the environment to then leverage all of that and create programming and structure and leverage and standardization, that's going to drive the quality of the product that we're providing to customers. It's going to drive that way up at a much lower cost, and that's going to be really hard for some other folks, I think, to compete with.
Yeah, it's going to make everything difficult. Marketing is going to make, you know, you're competing against these huge conglomerates that have very deep pockets and they have very sophisticated marketing tactics, and they're going to be very targeted into what they're doing, and they're going to be in your backyard. And how do you compete against that? It's going to be a whole different world. And same thing with every other aspect, talent, everything else. We mentioned this earlier. We were talking before we shot this, but it's going to be difficult to attract really good talent when your benefit package is here and you've got, you know, Morgan Stanley based benefit package over here that's going to still equate maybe cash-wise close to the same thing, plus a whole slew of health and dental and everything else that people really care about that up until now our industry's never seen. And so, I mean, that's just one example of how difficult it's going to be to attract and retain good employees. And so there's a lot of things that I think we're failing to really look at when we look at all this, but it also doesn't mean that you have to sell out. It just means that you've got to be willing to accept that. You're going to have to really raise the level of sophistication within your organization very quickly to be able to compete with the likes of something like All-Star or any of these other ones. There's multiple out there. So it's a different world for sure.
Yeah, and if I could quickly just respond to a few of those kind of points / questions there, I think a key of our culture is to create opportunity for our partners and their teams. And we've already seen that with creating additional, whether it's regional positions, as I mentioned earlier, offline or national positions. We want a key tenet of our culture to be opportunity creation for our partners and their teams. And we're seeing that, and that's going to be attractive to mm-hmm. highly talented individuals. I think also, just earlier, you were mentioning what I would characterize as kind of cultural apprehension, right? What does this mean for my team? What does this mean for our culture? We've built, people like working here. People are excited to come to work. We are attracting good people today. And I think that is both the opportunity and maybe a little bit of the burden is maintaining that, what makes them unique and special, as I mentioned earlier, but then building our own successful culture from that. We've begun on that journey, and I think there's an obvious path to get there where I think some of that apprehension will go away over time as they understand what that means and what it means for them, and all of this new opportunity that's been created, not only for local growth and local opportunity, but also regional and partnering and interacting with other teams. Whether it's different marketing folks, marketing teams interacting, sales leaders, sales reps, just that cross-pollination and that interaction has been really fun, I think, for a lot of people. And it's awesome to see, and it's just kind of happening organically because of the platform and the framework we've created to enable that.
No, and that's what's going to change everything. And it kind of leads to what I really wanted to get to today and kind of ask you a candid question, but what do you see this industry looking like in 5, 7, 10 years from now? What are the differences? How is it going to be structured? Where do you see us going?
Yeah, I think I reserve the right to be wrong. I think it's early to have an opinion on that, but I think ultimately
this is speculative.
Yeah, of course. I think we're going to see the quality of the product and the service that's being provided to customers go way up. I think we're going to see enormous transparency in the industry. So, and along with that transparency is going to come increased trust for the consumer. And along with that, we're going to be able to drive a lot of the unnecessary cost out with a national platform and a national program. So we're going to be able to be way more attentive to the customer's needs. They're going to trust us. They're going to know what something should cost, how long it should take. Are they getting a good product, a good service? And they're going to get that at a really good price over time because of a lot of the investment that we're making into this industry.
Yeah, it's gonna look a little different than it does today, I believe. And I think from the top down, I think there's going to be a difference in the way manufacturers attract the way manufacturers handle our industry, the way distribution handles our industry, the way consumers view the industry, and it's going to look completely different than it does today. And I always like to reference HVAC because HVAC is probably one of the closest and easiest ones for us to identify and be able to study. But HVAC looks completely different now than it did 20 years ago. 20 years ago it was very entrepreneurial based, a lot of tradesman based, a lot of hey, I've got a van and I've got my tools and I can go out and do the work. And today it's very corporatized. And I was driving through Indy this week and this was an electrical company that I'd never seen before. And then all of a sudden I saw six other trucks and vans driving around. And I've never seen them. I don't even know idea where they came from, what's going on. All of a sudden I see this company driving around town and I'm like, this is what the future looks like though, is these companies are going to come in, they're going to dominate markets very quickly and create a complete shift in what we consider to be our staples. If everyone runs their companies and they run their markets in a certain way, I think it's going to be very easy for a competitor to come in and just dominate quickly and own a market space in a way that most people don't even understand. So
definitely. I think, one other quick point, much like we've seen happen on the institutional SFR side, that I come from earlier in my career, we're going to see a lot of automation, a lot of artificial intelligence, predictive technology.
Yeah.
We've already seen pieces of this entering into the roofing space, and mm-hmm. there are folks dabbling, but I think that's going to play a much larger role in the future as well as we build larger, more precise data sets to act and operate from. I think that's going to be a huge area of opportunity as well.
It's going to be wild. A lot of changes, a lot of cool stuff. And I always, some people get scared when they see all the changes. I get excited because I know that amongst change, there's opportunity. And if you're listening to this, watching this today, and you're like, hey, this is scary but yet exciting, and maybe I want to learn more about it, I'd love to connect you guys with All-Star and potentially give you guys an opportunity to at least have a conversation. I say this, but there's a window of time here, and this happens with every single industry. You can go back and you can study all the different ways that business operates and capitalism works. This is capitalism at work right here. Large institutions come in, they understand there's an opportunity, they see it for what it is, they start to capitalize on it. And some people that get the most, some people that seize the opportunity the most are the ones that are entrepreneurs that are able to get rewarded for the work that you've done up until now and move yourself into a different space. And it's not, I like to say this too, it's not selling out. You're not selling out. You're joining a new organization, and it's really leveling up. You're leveling up your life. You're leveling up your company. You're leveling up your people and giving them an opportunity that most people don't understand. So I'll include a link in the comments here or in the show notes for you guys to be able to give us your information. Tell us, hey, I'm interested in learning more about how I can level up my company. We would love to connect you with All-Star and potentially give you guys an opportunity to just have a conversation and learn more about it. It could be something that does work for you. It could be something that doesn't work for you. I don't know. But it's something that's cool, and I think it behooves you to at least check it out and potentially take that first step and see if this is something that works for your future or not. But I appreciate you spending time and helping us understand this space and just in general, like coming into our world and bringing a new level of sophistication to not just All-Star, but ultimately this is going to bring a new level of sophistication to the industry. This is the beginning of the rise of roofing in a way that we've never seen before. So thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you, John. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely, sir. So make sure to hit that link. And those of you guys that are watching this full length thing, I appreciate you guys paying attention to this. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and see you guys soon. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us today on the American Contractor Show. Be sure to subscribe, hit that thumbs up, and leave your comments below. We'll see you guys in the next one. Have you ever wondered how to save time when it comes to managing your team? Well, Connect Team has got you covered with some amazing features that will make your life easier. With Connect Team, you can easily notify your employees about their shift changes. This means no more worries about whether or not your employees have been informed about important updates. You can even track if tasks have been completed, so you don't have to waste time checking in on each employee individually. This feature saves you time and helps keep your team accountable. Connect Team also allows you to check if employees are clocked in at the correct location, which is especially important if you have different job sites to keep track of. This ensures that everyone is working when they are supposed to and where they are supposed to. And finally, with Connect Team, you can check who has seen the general announcements. This is a great way to make sure everyone is up to date with important information. The best part is, Connect Team is completely free, as long as you have 10 employees or less. Try it out and let us know what you think.